At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer. Inside the evidence, behind the headlines, from someone who's been there. Here now, Jennifer Coffendaffer.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Thank you for joining me this morning. I know it's a little last minute, but there was really what I consider pretty breaking news that came out, if it's to be believed. I think it's really important for understanding what happened in Celeste Rivas case. For those of you who don't know the background, Celeste Rivas, and let me put just a photo up here. She was reported as a missing person long ago, actually months ago. And when she was reported missing, she actually was kind of missing, not missing, missing, not missing. We know that there's film, I've showed it before, of her at her home months after this post was made and after she was reported missing. So she was sort of run away, go back, run away, go back. But then she took up a relationship with D4VD, which is David. That's how he spells his name. And this relationship is corroborated through multiple photos, through tattoos on their fingers that line up. It says shh, dot, dot, dot on their index fingers. Again, photographic evidence, video evidence, streaming evidence, evidence from witnesses. There is no doubt. I'm going to put up another picture of them. I think I have a stream photo here to show you. There is absolutely no doubt, I have a lot of photos here, that they were involved with one another. In any event, Celeste Rivas was found deceased in the frunk of the vehicle of David's Tesla. I want to just show this. This is the actual picture. So this is the bag. And I just want to make it clear, and I've made this clear before, that this is not a normal trunk. This is your normal average trunk, right? Big, certainly a body can fit in there, maybe two or three. But in the frunk, and I did a demonstration to show, there's just not enough room for a full-on body and rigor to ever be in there. Nevertheless, this is the actual photo of the vehicle. It was essentially left on a street near the house where David was staying. It was a house that was actually leased by his manager, but he was the one staying there. And the Tesla was abandoned very near that house. There's a lot of footage of this abandonment. And we're going to go into essentially what the new information is. How did she get in that trunk? And where the investigation is looking at right now. So again, she was found in this trunk in early September. And now we have a much clearer timeline, again, if this information is to be believed. Now, let me get right into the information. This information comes to us from a private eye who's in Los Angeles. He is very well known in the social media community. You might have followed him on the Kylie Rodney case. Terrible press came out on him then. If you're interested, you guys can all go take a look. Accused of lying, various instances through that case. And then we all are very familiar who follows Sebastian Rogers' case. He was paid $15,000 by the Proudfoots to work for them in sort of a media blitz, if you will, and doing some searching, although he's the first to say that he's terrified of claustrophobia and wasn't really able to search the cavernous areas that were in the area where Sebastian Rogers went missing. But anyway, Lore Lodge, For those who don't follow Lore Lodge, I highly recommend his YouTube. He mostly works on cases that are have already, you know, they're unsolved, they're mysterious. But he got involved in the Sebastian Rogers case and really did a huge deep dive. And he did a deep dive with Steve Fisher, who again is this PI I'm talking about. As I said, many of you know him from the various cases that he got involved in. So I just need to preface that all of this information is from him. And I know my DMs are blowing up, my strings are blowing up because I detailed a lot of this information that he gave. And everybody's like, oh my gosh, it's Steve Fisher. Because at the very end, I put the PI is Steve Fisher. I thought it was important for that note to come out for everybody to make your own decisions on whether this information is credible or not. But I think it is important to look at. If you look at Steve Fisher, specifically, he was asked why in the world that he got involved in the case. That was one of the first questions asked of him. And he gave an interesting question or an answer. He said he was working on another missing girl. He thought that maybe this girl that he was working on could have, you know, been part of the case of this woman. In other words, that he, sorry, I want to get you guys your chat up on screen, that he may have been involved in being the missing woman that was found in the Tesla. So basically he's working another case. So he says, and that is what piqued his interest in this case. Okay. So once he gets involved, then he makes contact with apparently the owner of the house. The owner of the house is concerned because according to Fisher, the PI, he says that there was no return of the search warrant made or a copy of the search warrant left. Now, oftentimes, whoever owned was renting the house, that is who you are required to leave the documents with. So I could tell that the PI, Fisher, doesn't understand that. Typically, you can leave it at the residence and you can leave it in the hands of who is leasing the house. Because at that point, legally, they are the ones that are, if you will, responsible and connected to the evidence, not necessarily the landlord. The landlord could have no idea what's going on in there. And really, it served on the occupants of that establishment. So that's why particularly law enforcement didn't try to send it to the landlord or give it to the landlord. But I think because the PI hasn't worked, law enforcement probably isn't aware of that. So anyway, that was concerned, the landlord, rightfully so. And so the PI basically says, listen, I'll go try to get a copy of that. He's unsuccessful, but it would seem that that sort of opened the door for appreciation or for this landlord, whether it was put into his head or not put in his head. He was concerned about, did anything happen with my house? Was anybody in there? And so he wanted a PI to look into the details, which makes some sense to me. So in any event, according to Fisher, he's then hired by this landlord. Now that gave Fisher the ability, and I'll just call him the PI for those of you tuning in. So it's very, you know, obvious who I'm talking about. The PI from that point on essentially has a lot of information. He's able to be in the house. He's able to understand security. He can, you know, canvas the neighborhood and do a lot of research. He talks about how the information that he gleaned, he gave over to LAPD very quickly within a short time frame of finding it, which is a point I want to move back to. But essentially, let's talk about this house. Now, recall there was a search warrant done at this house very early on in the case. And of course, there was going to be a search warrant. The guy that was living in the house, whose car her dead body was found in, I mean, literally from the beginning of this case, and just putting on, you know, my experience cap here, all roads lead to David. all roads lead to David. There could be other help. There could be other people involved. But I think if we're to believe this new information, that road just got even stronger. I want to go point by point over the new information. All right. Number one, the PI says there is no information that Celeste was evidence of whatever happened to Celeste being in the house. So I think that's really important. But he goes on to say, and this is really important, that in fact, she was likely staying at a whole different place. And that makes a lot of sense. He says, there are many, many, many pictures of Celeste that were taken at this, you know, other location and other locations. And so it's clear that they were intertwined, but it seems clearer now that the house didn't really have to do with whatever crime may have been committed. Okay. So again, I'm caveating all of this with which this is information from the PI, not corroborated by anything else, from the PI. So take it for what it's worth. But there are some very interesting notes that seem to be believable. All right. The PI says there are surveillance cameras everywhere in that neighborhood, around that home, and where the car was parked. This is something we all knew. Ring camera. This isn't some big revelation. We know from the work TMZ has done. We know from the work that has been displayed on multiple social media platforms, including my own, about all of this video. And so it's clear that they have a timeline. And the PI says that. That basically you can make up a timeline because of all of this surveillance video, including surveillance video on the vehicle when it was parked. Further, the PI says it's clear who parked the video, that he knows who parked the video. Certainly law enforcement knows who parked the video. But again, you could park a video, park the Tesla. I'm talking about the Tesla, if I misspoke. There's a video of the Tesla being parked. And in that video, you can see who parked the Tesla. But there's a big difference, a leap that law enforcement sort of has to make from, did this person park the Tesla with the knowledge that there was a dead body in the front? Could you have parked that car and not smelled the odor, not known, just inadvertently park the video? Okay, come on, everybody. Let's use any and all common sense. The answer to that question, in my opinion, is no. No. Because why would you be parking the Tesla? Now, if he had somebody else do it, possibly that person doesn't have liability, possibly. But certainly, if David parked it, which the PI basically all but said that that's what happened. He didn't say that, so I want to be crystal clear. He doesn't exactly give up who parks it, but he said you can clearly see it. Remember, we've always wondered that. Were they not charging because the person was all in black? The person was masked. It was impossible to tell. Remember, David has a very interesting stature. He's teeny. Like, he's my size almost. He's 5'2", 5'3", okay, an inch and a half more, whatever, a couple inches more than me. He's tiny. If you've seen videos of him or pictures against just normally sized people, they tower over this little guy. So he's little. That was part of my demonstration about how could he pick up a 5'1" Celeste and stuff her in this trunk. But my husband, who works out all the time, he's pretty darn strong, in a bag, a slippery bag, or even a not slippery bag. Dead weight is so heavy. I've showed a lot of video of big guys barely able to trudge around a dead body. And it's difficult to lift that up without any help and put that in the front. So I've always maintained and will continue to maintain, whoever did this, this wasn't just one person. I don't think, you know, David went out and got, if she was dismembered, got a saw, sawed her all up, you know, did all of this on his own without any help. I just don't buy it. And I could be proven wrong, but every investigative instinct of mine tells me that whoever did this, it was a posse. It was more than one. It wasn't just David, if David is involved. And to me, the road, again, is narrowing toward David. All right. So law enforcement knows who parked it. So they're working on trying to figure out how she died and who could have actually committed that murder, or if she OD'd and then, you know, she was just hidden after that. So they already know who parked the car. The question is, how can they prove that the person who parked the car had knowledge? But I still think that is huge, that they have an extensive timeline based on all this video surveillance and a picture of who parked the car. That's going to be so critical. Anybody want to make a wager on whether that's David or not? Anyway. Okay. This was terrible news, I think, from an investigative standpoint. The PI says that despite a search warrant being searched at the house, that they left behind some critical evidence, at least evidence that the PI thought was critical. And we're going to get into that later. He kind of discloses what at least part of that was. He mentions, I think, a DVD or DVR. So he mentioned some electronics that were left behind. That's the one he pinpointed, but we're going to see what else was left behind, because the PI gives us a lot of clues as to what also was left behind. But that gives me a lot of pause, you know, and I could tell the PI doesn't understand this either. When you write a search warrant, you basically can search in the smallest space where a particular item could have been. So let's say they said papers and documents. So now you can search down to papers and documents. Say they said a DVD. You could search down to where a little DVD could be. So my point is law enforcement likely, in my opinion, having written dozens and dozens and served dozens and dozens of search warrants over the last 28 years of my career, I can tell you they've looked everywhere. They should have looked everywhere for evidence. And the fact they left anything behind is disconcerting. It's concerning. It's not good. Law enforcement needs to be more thorough. You know, and I know this wasn't an FBI search. I just can't tell you the thoroughness of the FBI. We go into a room, we coordinate all off. We, you know, label it by letters. We search it from ceiling to floor. And when I say floor, I mean, if there's carpet, that's going to be pulled up. We're going to look for secret compartments. If there's wood, we're going to check every wood plank to make sure nothing's loose. We're going to be just so, so, so thorough. And this concerned me. How thorough were they if a PI goes in there later and there's all this evidence, at least, you know, again, is he just trying to be famous and say, yeah, I found the smoking gun that, you know, law enforcement left behind? We saw sorts of that go on previously in other cases. So, you know, I don't know. You have to look at the motive of the PI. For me, if I hired a private investigator, first of all, keyword private, if I hire a private investigator and maybe he gave him permission, I don't want any of this coming out. I don't want one iota of this investigation coming out. I've paid this individual privately to provide me with the information so I can be armed if I'm facing any civil suits. I can be armed if I have a dead body, you know, or body part in my attic, or whatever the case may be. I want to get somebody in there. The problem is, and I always say this, if you're going to hire a private eye, please do not hire a private eye that became a private eye on the internet, basically, that had an interest in missing people and that decided to become a private eye. Please hire a private eye that has extensive law enforcement experience. FBI is great, but homicide, a detective and a law enforcement officer for years with a a large reputable department. It's critical because when you have time behind the tiller, I call it, for you sailors out there, you've made mistakes. You've gone down the wrong road. You know when something means something. You understand why a search warrant return wouldn't have been left. You sent to the landlord. You understand the intricacies of evidence. Of course, every PI needs to be judged on their own merit. I'm just saying that's a recommendation I give to everybody who contacts me because people think I'm a PI and I am not a PI. That's not my business. I would never want to be a PI. I've already been an FBI special agent for 25 years. So I have no interest in, looking into, a lot of mundane who's somebody sleeping with or something stolen, because let's face it, the cases like this are extremely rare. And some PIs put on their, they want to get right down into it. But to give credit where it's due, I don't know if some of you remember the Kobayashi case. This was a young woman who went missing in LA. And many of us were concerned about how law enforcement was handling it from the standpoint of they weren't taking it at all seriously. They were sort of treating it as, she chose to go missing. And many of us were saying, listen, from the clues, from what the family was so distraught. They said, she never acted like this. I could go on and on with this case. But basically, many of us, because of our experience and knowing how many of these cases turn out, which is terrible, which is dead people. Kata, that I'm following very closely. I'm going to do another live specifically on Kata, who went missing in Philadelphia and still hasn't been found. Again, nefarious, bad situation there. But to this PI's credit, he did the smart thing because, again, he's a PI and he's there in California, so it's easy to do the legwork. He went to the Greyhound bus station and got information that showed basically she was by herself and she bought a ticket. And so he was the first sort of to know or to realize that Kobayashi wasn't taken, that she left on purpose, which ended up being true. So to his credit, I think when you can do legwork like that, you have a leg up on other people in the true crime community that are following all the other information we can get our hands on, but we can't go to a Greyhound bus station and pull a record. And that's where, in this case, he has a leg up because the PI has been in this residence. He's been able to view surveillance video. And so that's why I'm featuring this, because I believe it's important and I believe it's relevant. You all can make your own decisions on whether it's accurate or not. Okay, so anyway, LAPD apparently, according to the PI, screwed up and left behind very important evidence, which he says he/landlord, they turned it over right away after they found it. Again, to me, that evidence is already messed up. I mean, the chain of custody is a hot mess. Yes, they have it and they've got the chain from when they found it till when it goes to prosecutors, but I doubt if it will ever be able to be used. It may be able to because of all the people who had access to that house before it would have been turned over to law enforcement. So hot mess here, if it's true. And I'm going to get into what some of that evidence might have been. Again, we know electronic evidence. How do you leave that behind? Can you imagine some of the clues that might have been on that? So LAPD dropped the ball there if we're to believe Fisher. If we're to believe Fisher. And we've seen it before where law enforcement and people have come out and said, that didn't happen. But we'll see how this ferrets out. Okay. Let's see. Okay, this is really important. According to the PI, there is no video footage that shows a body being put into the Tesla. So he said that means neither before it was parked in the space where it was towed from or after it was parked in the space it was towed from. So at least as far as Fisher knows, he doesn't see video of that, the PI. LAPD, though, remember, they're going to have access to so much more than Ring Cam video. They're going to have access to all that video, that street camera video. They are likely going to be able to trace this Tesla. And again, through the Tesla programming, they're going to be able to trace where this Tesla goes. I've talked about how the cameras can be disabled on a Tesla if it's not in sentry mode. But I don't know, I don't think the rest of the information. I think the Tesla should hold a lot of information, GPS type information, tracking information. And I think law enforcement probably has this huge timeline regarding tracking that vehicle and when a body possibly could have been put in it. In other words, where did it go that was interesting, that was off-road? Or to some abandoned warehouse or something else where this crime could have taken place. All right. Okay, we talked about that. Mini neighborhood cameras. No. Okay, this was really interesting to me. According to the PI, the Tesla hadn't been used since about January. January, everyone. And in fact, according to the PI, February 1st, very specific, a new Tesla is leased. I'm not going to say David rented it because often you can see he does things in his manager's name or other people's name. I mean, he's a millionaire. He's a recording artist. He's got money. So, you know, maybe not going to be caught in the minutia of putting together a lease, having somebody else do it. But he has a red Tesla now. That's what was replaced. And nobody knew this detail. And this was a huge detail, in my opinion, that came out. Not so much that you lease another Tesla, because a lot of people with money and stars, they have, you know, tons of cars. Some people are car people and they have a lot of vehicles. So that wasn't what was interesting. What was interesting is no longer is David apparently using the black Tesla where Celeste was found. And this is back in January. This is where the PI is a little vague. He says, that's when things really changed. Things. He doesn't say exactly what things, but basically says, you know, the Tesla isn't being driven anymore and a new red car is found. Well, I mean, this gives us a huge timeline into, you know, in January. And then he further states, the PI further states that he reviewed oodles of photos of Celeste, that they're everywhere, according to him. And yet, not one photo after January 2nd. I'm going to double check my notes, but I think he said January 2nd. And that is really a big thing to me. Yep, January 2nd, 2025, last photo taken of Celeste. And I caveated it that the PI has seen. Maybe there'll be other photos that come out. But if there's all these photos of her, you know how kids are now. They take photos, selfies, they're constantly camera everywhere. Nothing after January 2nd. Let me tell you why I think this is so critical. Because New Year's Eve is a huge date that we in law enforcement take note of. It's a date, sadly, when people take their lives. It's a date. It's a turning point for a lot of people. It's a date where people over celebrate and OD. It's a date where parties occur and things get out of hand and people can die. That is so critical to me when I heard January 2nd. And I thought, oh my God, did this all happen on a New Year's thing? New Year's Day, New Year's Eve? Was this an OD? You know, I've been saying that from the beginning, very early on Hidden Killers podcast, actually asked me what I think could have happened. And that was what I said. I'm not saying that happened. I'm saying that my belief is 50% something really heinous and sick and gory and horrific, or she OD'd. I really don't have much in between. I don't necessarily think this was some crime of passion and he hit her over the head because of some more new information that came out. Plus, and I've always said this too, have to look at David's, need to look at his macabre, and that's to say it lightly, macabre lyrics and he's gross. I mean, not gross. He's, I mean, this is one of his pictures. This is his video, not mine. And there's a lot more, you know, but basically this guy seemed obsessed with blood and with death. And I mean, he puts a dead body in a trunk, for heaven's sakes. How much more of a clue do we need than that? Again, just going on my experience. I mean, there are so many clues here and people could say, oh yeah, but you know, this is just his artistic expression. I call BS on that. Now, legally, are they going to be able to use it in a court of law? Well, we've already seen, you know, cases where judges do not allow artistic expression that's related to the crime to necessarily be shown. So, you know, I don't know if we're going to be able to see, I don't know if we're going to be able to see everything that these songs, if indeed he's charged, come out. But I'm paying attention to them and I think they're very important. I wanted to just from his song, hit song, it's really become a hit now. Isn't it sad that now that he's become famous? He really wasn't famous before at all. I think he had a following, but he wasn't famous. He was certainly making millions of dollars, but he wasn't what I would call, you know, I shouldn't say Madonna, whatever. He wasn't a well-known artist, like the names that just roll off your tongue. But he certainly had a following and he was certainly able to book concerts and even internationally across the pond. And he was certainly making a name for himself. But one of these lyrics, he says, quote, "In the back of my mind, I killed you and I didn't even regret it. I can't believe it. I said it, but it's true. I hate you." Ugh, so dark. I mean, this is the type of lyric, if they found out he did this, they should be able to show this scene where he's put a body in the trunk, where he's all bloodied up. They should be able to show the romantic homicide, all that lyrics, the song he wrote, definitely the song he wrote that's unpublished, named Celeste. All of that needs to come in. These, in my opinion, are clues. And I've talked about this before, but you take the totality of the circumstance, you look at all the circumstantial evidence, and these are pieces that go into a puzzle that show, to me, likely culpability in some way with this case. All right, I want to keep moving on because several other items that were said. All right. Sorry, let me get back to my list of items to go over. All right. The PI says he doesn't have any clue as to her cause of death or manner of death. In everything he's done, he says nothing came out so far that he's looked into. And it's not going to come out. This should be no surprise to anybody. If she died, let's go with the premise. And this is strictly a premise that I think is based on a lot of facts we have. But let's go with the premise that she died in January. Okay? Died in January. And her body was someplace else, someplace else, someplace else. For whatever reason, they decide they need to move it from that someplace else. They move it and they put it in a trunk, just like his video. They drive it where they can closely sort of monitor it. You know, they can see it and then they can also try to take an opportunity when they think the opportunity is right to move it. That opportunity, it seemingly never came. But I think that that is likely what happened. She died was wherever she died at for a long time and was essentially moved. And that car was parked there. And that's why that car was parked there. And remember, it's a little off the beaten path, but it's something that they would be able to see. And I can just see them thinking, well, we got an eye on the car. Nobody seems to be bothering it, except the fact neighbors are getting PO'd that there's an abandoned car. Remember, per reports, he was paying 20 grand a month for this house. This is not a cheap area. This is a mansion. This is big money. And, you know, they didn't appreciate a car that, by the way, was super banged up being parked on their street for an extended amount of time. So there were tickets being put on it clear back. I think it's August 26th, if I recall, it's first ticketed. And then finally it gets towed. Now, remember this whole time, and this is an important point, the PI says, that after the vehicle was parked there, he says right after that, a van came by, a bus, like a tour bus for David, and loaded him up. They loaded him up. So he's loaded up and starts his tour after that. So he's sort of out of the picture after this car gets parked. And I think that's very interesting too. I think that's very interesting as well. Okay, a couple more things. According to the PI, and this comes back to evidence that it would seem LAPD left behind. And the reason I say that is because there's no way Fisher would know about this evidence unless it was left in the house. And this to me is very relevant. He says there were plans about how to get rid of Celeste, and they were scary and sadistic. That's what the PI says. Now, again, I couch it. Got to consider the source. But can you imagine leaving behind, whether it's paperwork, whether it's notebook? He makes it sound like there was a plan and a plan with others on what to do with her, how to get rid of her. That is strong evidence that it would seem they might have overlooked. Cry and shame if somebody's charging this. And this is one of these cases that you just hope isn't like an Ellen Greenberg case. Ellen Greenberg, for those of you who don't know, stabbed 23 times, we know. One of them in the back was a lethal incision or stab wound. I mean, she's all stabbed up in the back and then stabbing in the front, which absolutely makes no sense. So she stabs herself all in the back and then lays against the cabinet, stabs her all in the front. By the way, one of those stabbed wounds was lethal. Come on. But anyway, that's another case. But that case was so messed up in terms of law enforcement. Law enforcement coming in there, they didn't grab anything. The fiance's uncle came in, you know, he was called apparently before 911. He comes in there, he gets her cell phone, he gets her computer, he gets all the evidence that basically law enforcement should have gotten. He gets judge uncle of the fiance, takes it all out. And then the next day, law enforcement allows a biohazard team to go in and scrub the entire crime scene. And we wonder why there's no justice for Ellen Greenberg. But I hope that nothing like that happens here. You know, I hope that because of mistakes that law enforcement made, if it's true, if we're to believe the PI, that information was left behind there regarding, in the PI's words, sadistic, I want to do this right, scary and sadistic plans to get rid of Celeste. That's a huge mistake. So I always worry when I see these mistakes, you just always worry that that's not going to be the impetus for a prosecutor not to prosecute. Okay. He further says there were plans for Celeste that would, quote, blow your mind. This is what the PI says. So basically saying how I took it, is these plans for her were so heinous and so horrible, sadistic. He used the word sadistic. Sadistic is loving to inflict pain on another, you know, dismemberment You know, now that's starting to line up in a different way than just trying to conceal her. And that can happen as well, although about 90% they're trying to conceal or hide their crime. But man, that's super, super concerning. Super concerning when you look at all of this. The PI says that someone was staying inside the house while David was touring. So, you know, was he there to just mind the house, which makes a lot of sense when you go on a long trip or you're going to be gone a month. You want to make sure, even though they had sophisticated surveillance equipment, you want to make sure that somebody's there caring for the house, blah, blah, blah. You know, you don't have some sort of toilet leak and then overflows and ruins your whole second floor or first floor, or whatever the case may be. So it makes sense that somebody was there, but would that somebody also be able to have access to that Tesla? Anyway, the way the PI brings up this other person that was at the house, it just seemed like, were they involved in any way? It just, the way he says it, it came out to me like, you know, is this person. The PI says, quote, there was a twisted plan or plot, I think he said, plan or plot, but it wasn't put into motion. And he even says, so how can you charge for a plan or plot that wasn't put to motion? Well, it's very interesting, right? So I'm picturing he's finding writings. I think David would argue it was part of a song, but it sounds like it's between different people, according to the PI, that they were plotting this. And it was something put into motion, but it never carried out. And I would believe the PI knows it wasn't carried out because the details don't line up with what happened to Celeste. So he knows it wasn't carried out. And his point, the PI's point is, so how can you charge for a plan that wasn't carried out? Well, let me tell you, this is called 404B. And it's to show a likeness and pattern, or I should say specifically that something that was done wasn't, there's all sorts of particular areas of 404B, but particularly one of them is to show that something wasn't just an accident. And this is critical. This would be exactly what I would be looking for as an investigator, to show plotting. Even if it wasn't the plan that ended up being carried out, was there ever a plan? Was the plan to get rid of Celeste in a sadistic and evil way? And then now she's folded up, completely, her body is desecrated by this time, especially if it was January, in the frunk of a Tesla. So it would seem another plan happened, but again, could it have been accidental? And then after that, the plan was hatched, or was an OD part of the plan, or was it something really gruesome like the PI says that they were planning and just didn't finish out? Like I said, the only way he could say that would be because the details of the plan don't match up with what ended up happening. But we don't really know what happened to Celeste. And the only person who's going to know what happened to Celeste is hopefully a forensic anthropologist. They should be able to go through and outline what likely happened to her. Poison, OD, strangulation, blunt force trauma, all the possibilities, hopefully a forensic anthropologist can figure out. The PI says something very interesting about surveillance videos within the house, that he says it's a very sophisticated system. Now, he really only talks about, and I don't consider this very sophisticated. I mean, I have this. I think everybody does, right? I know when my door is open. I know when my doors close, cameras, and when windows open and close. I mean, I guess it's could be somewhat sophisticated. What I call sophisticated, and maybe this was the way, is cameras that track people, and that any motion you're tracked, and cameras all over really tracking motion. That to me is sophisticated. Also, cameras that can see in dark, you know, that have that sort of capability, and they're out there. also cameras that can be controlled remotely and be repositioned and all of that. Now, maybe that's the case, but all Fisher mentioned, the PI, all he said was sophisticated, and he said that it could keep track of when somebody came in and out and windows opening and closing. So that's the only information we have. Now, he also made an interesting comment that the smoke alarm part of the system, it was covered. And he speculates that maybe cameras could have been covered up. And he does this because he says, because of what was happening in the house. So I'm picturing drug usage, smoking dope, and God knows whatever else was going on in that house, that if they were wise enough to make sure no smoke alarms went off or anything by somehow covering them, they could have been wise enough to also conceal camera footage that would incriminate them. That was what was basically said by the PI. I mean, that's his speculation, which makes some sense to me. The PI says he doesn't know where David is. He speculates that the only people that know are his parents and his attorney. He doesn't know that. That's just a speculation he made. I want to make sure that I didn't miss anything. I mean, the key points are this twisted, sadistic, scary plan that would blow our minds. Again, this is the PI's word, not mine. And the fact that the LAPD left it behind. How do you do that? How do you leave behind, according to the PI? And if this comes out to be a lie, I'll never, ever quote him again. But if he's telling the truth and it's later corroborated, gosh, what a terrible job. And again, I hope this doesn't mean there won't be justice for Celeste because of a mess up by the PD in not thoroughly searching, you know, that residence. Let's just hope that even if there were mistakes, that they don't do that. It's obviously not going to be able to be used, I don't think. I mean, a good lawyer is going to be able to get that thrown away because of custody issues. Oh, somebody wrote those notes or planted that later. That wasn't in his possession. It's just a mess. Basically, whatever the PI says he found is not going to be usable, in my opinion, most likely in any type of litigation because it's corrupted. Chain of custody is ruined, so it's probably going to be out. Shame on them if they did that. I just want to make sure I did not miss anything. I do want to note that the DA came out and made a statement, and just the two key points from his statement is no case has been brought to the DA for prosecution. Now, you might remember, and if you would like, you could look back, but I had just one of my favorite attorney guests on, Philip Dubé, who was a prosecutor in LA and a defense attorney in LA for decades. And he said, most likely the DA isn't going to be involved. So we were discussing the difference between federal prosecution and state prosecution, or at least there, that basically there's not much coordination. Now, I did see the DA, he made it sound like there was more coordination than that. When I say coordination, I'm going to, from the very beginning, get my prosecutor on board. I have to have him on board. I have to have him on board if he's going to do a grand jury investigation. I have to have him on board if I need grand jury subpoenas. I have to have him on board for getting advice sometimes on legal issues that I might come across that I need his legal advice on. So, you know, that was foreign to me when Dubé talked about how limited the relationship is early on. But I think it's because they have so many fewer cases than in the federal system. I mean, so many more cases. It's just like you know, they're gulping cases because there's so much crime. Whereas federally, we only take certain cases, and then those cases, we're going to work close with our prosecutors on all of that. But according to the DA, he says, quote, no case has been brought for prosecution. He also says no cause or manner has been determined yet. So now he said this actually before. At one point it came out homicide, but that seems to be backtracked now to not even any manner. And again, you can have a homicide and not have a murder. They don't, you know, necessarily go together. In other words, you can accidentally kill somebody. It could be a manslaughter. It could be an involuntary homicide. There's all sorts of different types of homicides that aren't murder. Murder meaning intent, whether that be first degree or second degree. So he says no manner, and he says no cause. We knew no cause. Again, it's going to take a while for them, and hopefully they'll be able to. I am very worried about that. But many times you can do cases with no bodies. There's a lot of no body cases, but I'm worried. And let me tell you, it's so disappointing lately to see so many cases that we're featuring where the prosecution either doesn't prosecute, or if they do prosecute, they offer sweetheart deals even when they have huge amount of evidence. I'm going to give you an example. This was a Florida case, and that's a case we all knew so well, Madeline Soto. I mean, they had hundreds of images, and they had video, and they had all this grossness that they had. They had the dead body. They had the picking up or the lies, the throwing the backpack in the dumpster. There was more evidence in that than you could shake a stick at. And they chose to give him a deal and not put the death penalty on the line. So, and then, of course, I mean, Irina, I don't want to say her last name wrong. I don't have it in front of me. But Irina, the girl in North Carolina who was, you know, stabbed to death on the light rail, you know, that guy had been arrested over 20 times, as I recall, 20 times. Every case I look at, everybody's been arrested forever. Emmanuel Haro, oh my gosh, dead at the hands of his father who beat his other baby, 10-month-old, senseless and left her completely debilitated for life. And he gets nothing. You know, he gets some community service hours. So I don't know. I've never been so skeptical. I was never skeptical in the Bureau because we had such great prosecutors. They wanted every I dotted and T's crossed. But I'm telling you, they were committed to justice, and they fought for justice. And they, even though they made sure their cases were tight, you know, they would have never released these guys out onto the streets. I never see that happen federally. All right. Seems dark. All roads lead to David, in my view, and others. Others unnamed co-conspirators, I believe. I don't think he did this on his own. I think he's, let's just say, in my book, he's a prime suspect. He hasn't been named as a suspect. I want to make that clear. This is just from what we can see. I want to just leave with a picture of our victim up here. Guys, they met when she was approximately 12 years old online. He's a Hello Kitty addict. She loved Hello Kitty. They spent a lot of time together. Do I think they had a sexual relationship? Absolutely. Do I think law enforcement is going to be able to prove it? Not unless they have images of them sexually together or conversations with them sexually together about what they did with each other. Other than that, it's just going to be so very, very hard to prove the sexual relationship. I just can't imagine that law enforcement won't move on this. Thank you, Deanna. Someone in chat, Deanna says in chat that they actually meant when they were 11. I thought it was about 12, but I believe you. I could be remembering that number wrong. She was 14, everyone, when she died. She died, was found a day before, or a day after, I believe, her 15th birthday. 14. And I know I've seen the video at the house. Listen, she's got a hot, hot mouth on her. She doesn't talk like my 14-year-old talked at that age, but you can tell she grew up in a different sort of environment, a rough, I think, maybe home environment, an environment that somehow she was lost in and was seeking. I'm not going to blame the parents here. I don't know enough about the situation to blame anyone except the people who did this to her. But the fact she was so young living with this guy or living in his circle and involved with him, it's just terrible. You guys, we'll keep watching, keep an eye on this case. I hope this was helpful in at least putting into perspective some of the things that were reported by the PI. We'll see what comes to bear. I'm very hopeful, though, that law enforcement will be able to make some sort of arrest. And I hope the mistakes they didn't make, or that they seemingly made, if we're to believe the PI, don't foil justice for Celeste Rivas. All right, everyone. Thanks for coming on joining us on a Saturday. I'm going to do two more shows today. I know that seems like a lot, especially since I only do one a week, but there's just so much breaking news that I want to talk about. I really want to talk about the Emanuel Haro case. It's going to be a shorter one, but I have so much to say about that one from a law enforcement perspective again. So I'm going to come and definitely talk about the case. And then I really want to talk about the Cada case, the case of the young woman that went missing and she's still not been found, but there's arrest that's been made. I have so much to say about that case. I'm livid at law enforcement, livid at the prosecution office. Again, the same prosecution office, you know, I should say that handled, I mean, to a degree, the same jurisdiction generally that handled the Ellen Greenberg case. So a lot to say on that. Everyone, I appreciate each of you so much. Have a beautiful Saturday. And until next time, may justice be served.
Want to break the case with Jennifer Coffendaffer even more? Then press subscribe right now and join Jen on YouTube. Just search Break the Case with Jennifer Coffendaffer now.